Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. What's a Megaflop? January 1983. Almost from its inception, the Apple II was very successful in the K-12 education market, giving Apple a natural affinity for education. In the late 1970s, Steve Jobs initiated a marketing program called Kids Can't Wait. He personally paced the halls of Congress in Washington for 3 weeks, lobbying for legislation that granted tax breaks for donating computers to schools. Even though the national legislation was stymied by politics, it was blocked by Bob Dole, California eventually passed a similar bill. Shortly afterwards, Apple donated almost 9,000 computers, one to every school in California. In early 1982, Joanna Hoffman remained the sole marketing person on the Mac team, and she was thinking about which market segments were likely to be early adopters of the Macintosh. Joanna thought the Mac was almost perfect for college students, and that it would be worthwhile to put together a plan for selling Macs to higher education. After a few months of working with consultants who understood the college market, a plan began to emerge. One of the words that the consultants reiterated was consortium. It seemed as though colleges loved to band together into various consortiums. We knew that the paucity of software at the Macintosh's launch would be a barrier to initial acceptance, but perhaps we could turn things around if we could convince colleges to form a Macintosh consortium where members received steeply discounted Macs for students and faculty. All we had to do was sign up a few of the most prestigious schools, and many of the rest would follow. Mike Murray, who was now the permanent interim Macintosh marketing manager, along with Joanna, realized they needed a superb salesman to take charge of recruiting customers for our consortium to be. The best salesperson that Joanna knew on the Lisa team was Daniel Lewin, a handsome, personable, Ivy-educated, ex-competitive swimmer who was frustrated with his current job of selling the Lisa to corporations. Daniel was intrigued, and after some negotiation, was soon barnstorming around the country visiting the leading universities. Mike Boych accompanied him, helping to run the demos and answering technical questions, all in an effort to convince universities to sign up with Apple and buy discounted Macs by the thousands. Some of the universities, like Drexel in Philadelphia, were easy sells since they were already thinking about purchasing a computer for each freshman. The Macintosh Consortium was the answer to their prayers, but others weren't that enthusiastic and required lots of hand-holding to coax them into the fold. Slowly, Daniel was able to build up a fairly impressive roster. Toward the end of January 1983, I was asked to accompany Daniel and Mike on one of the more unusual sales calls. We were heading to Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Brown was my alma mater, but I hadn't been back there since graduating in 1975. Brown had a strong computer science program, especially in the area of computer graphics, and was regarded as having a strong influence over other universities. They had recently splurged, buying dozens of powerful Apollo workstations at tens of thousands of dollars apiece, so we were afraid they would think the Mac was underpowered. The visit was thought to be so important that even Steve Jobs agreed to come along as part of the Apple contingent. The most influential decision-maker on the Brown faculty was a computer science professor named Andy Van Dam. I was one of his teaching assistants during my senior year, so I had gotten to know him pretty well. He was high-strung and hard-driving, and a little bit like Steve in his tendency to think that the universe revolved around him. Introductions were exchanged, and we were taken for a tour of the Brown Computing Lab, where they proudly showed off their brand new Apollo workstations. Then we were ushered into a conference room where Daniel talked about the consortium while we set up the Mac. We put the machine through its paces for the benefit of a half dozen faculty members and graduate students. Steve did most of the talking, eliciting oohs and ahs in all the right places. Finally, the demo was over, and Steve asked them what they thought. Andy Van Dam cleared his throat and looked right at Steve. "Well, it's really impressive, Steve, and of course we'll want to join your program, but it's not exactly what we've been waiting for." Steve looked a little angry. What are you waiting for? You're going to have to wait a long time to find something better than the Mac. Well, 128K isn't nearly enough memory to do what we want, not even close, and the screen is just too small. We're waiting for a 3M machine, and most of the other colleges are too. A what? A 3M machine. There was a recently published paper that coined the term. You know, a workstation with at least a megabyte of memory, a million pixel display, and a megaflop of computational horsepower. We believe that's what we need for an effective educational workstation. A megaflop was the ability to execute 1 million floating point operations per second. The Mac didn't have any floating point hardware, so it was off by an order of magnitude. In fact, we were off by a factor of 10 in each of the three dimensions. Oh, we believe in that too, Steve shot back without skipping a beat. Apple will have an affordable 3M machine before anyone else. I only have one question. What's a megaflop?